Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sports reporters assemble!
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, you heard it. The sports reporters, we have indeed assembled because it is Friday afternoon. You're hearing this on a Saturday morning before Tennessee just runs right over the Ole Miss Rebels on Saturday night in Neyland. But before Bob gets into that and all the good folks around the country tuning in on the SEC Network at 7:30, Bob Silverman of the Daily Beast is here. No Andrew Hammond of the Detroit Free Press this week. He will return next week.
Andrew, where are you? If you're listening, come back to us. I miss you. I miss your scent. I think this, when all this podcasting stuff is over, we should get an apartment together.
There you go. Andrew, he put it out there. Bob put it out there for you. Bob. How are things? How's
the dog? The classic 2006 comedy Anchorman.
Yes.
Those of you playing who don't remember that. Mm-hmm. Anchorman 2, possibly the worst movie of all time. I might. It's shockingly bad.
Was Anchorman 2? Okay, so was Anchorman 2 the one with Will Smith and everybody in it, the long fight scene?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So the reason I know that, because I only watched Anchorman 2 once, but I watched it being filmed.
That's more than the number of times anyone needs to have watched it. That's, sorry for your cheap cash grab, Will Ferrell, but no.
Well, the reason I say that is because, did you know where that was filmed? Where they put Central Park on the big screen?
What was the replacement for Central Park?
Downtown Atlanta, because I watched it happen.
Oh, very fun.
Yeah, I remember being confused. I saw Will and everybody in Will Smith. They were so careful because when you look back, it was a pretty stacked cast to all have in there for that long fight scene. So I watched that play out over the course of several days because I worked right across the street. And it was amazing because I was in the Flatiron Building. And I don't know, I just remember seeing all that going on and all the fake yellow cabs surrounding the area. It was amazing. Cause I asked, I was like, where are they trying? And I'm like, no, they're not going to try and say Woodruff Park is Central Park, but that is exactly what happened there.
That's right, folks. Gotham City is set in Chicago. Anchorman 2 is an Atlanta film.
We just destroyed so many Anchorman 2 diehards. I have not watched
it. I know. The Anchorman 2 subreddit is going to just take us down. They're going to be out for blood.
What a dark place.
Speaking of movies, they were filming a movie that is currently in production for Netflix, a rom-com called Your Place or Mine, starring Ashton Kutcher and Reese Witherspoon. They're filming that around the block from my place last week. And it was fun because I had to explain my significant other and I were sort of like wandering around, you know, running errands and going to the the farmer's market on Saturday. This is a thing that normal, good, healthy couples do. And so we were doing that. And so, you know, they took up the whole block filming this movie. And I had to sort of, and we stood there and we watched and we sort of like were half keeping an eye out to see what famous people we might be able to spy. And it was really a lot harder now because everyone was in masks. So you couldn't immediately sort of point and gawk at the famous people. So thanks, COVID-19, for that. But it's another heartbreaking tragedy due to COVID. Harder to stalk celebrities on movie sets. In any case, so we were there for like 10 minutes and half, you know, sort of while we were walking the dog and while we were sort of darting into various stores. And she asked me, she's like, is nothing actually going to happen here? And I had to say to her that this is how that so an unimaginable amount of time is spent on the set of even a low budget indie film, hanging around and waiting and seemingly with nothing happening before someone, a director, actually yells action, which they don't always actually do. But before a camera rolls and someone says a line, et cetera, et cetera. Even one that's not a Marvel movie or, you know, a big budget fight scene like Anchorman 2. It is a lot. Like, I've been on the set of a couple of super low budget movies. The amount of time you spend just sitting and waiting. And waiting and sitting and then doing one thing and then waiting some more and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting while a million other things in this entire army of workers required to make a single movie happen take place. It is from the outside, it looks like there are just hundreds of people standing around sipping coffee and doing nothing, which is not the case, but the actual A little peek behind the curtain there for all of you film buffs watching the show, and not just people in the Anchorman 2 subreddit. yeah, so we got to see that. That was fun. Ashton Kutcher was not filming that day, as far as I can tell, nor was Reese Witherspoon.
What was his hat game? Because he's very much addicted to rocking all kinds of different hats. He loves a good hat. He wears a hat every day. Did you see a Bears hat? Was it an Iowa Hawkeyes hat?
I did not see Ashton Kutcher. Again, I'll refer to you to the mask people.
Well, no, you can have a mask, but you can have the hat over it.
I did. You know, there were a lot of Teamsters there, and they all wore hats, so he probably blended in very well.
Okay. I feel like if I was with you guys, I would have been able to spot him within seconds because I would have seen that Iowa Hawkeyes logo.
One of the benefits coming to New York City and hanging out is the possible chance to tell what kind of hat Ashton Kutcher wears.
That is true. You might run into Peter Dinklage when you're walking your dog.
Yeah, I did that.
You did do that. Not the best interaction, though, Bob.
That was a great celebrity interaction.
I don't know what you were doing there.
Peter Dinklage said, cool pup, about my dog. Top that.
No, but what did you say in response?
Thanks.
Yeah, what is that? Thanks.
What would you like me to say? What should I say?
I mean,
like, what should I say? Like, you were awesome in Game of Thrones. I enjoyed that show a lot. It's very cool. No, play pool. He offered a compliment. I thanked him for the compliment. You meet him on his level and don't think you're going to recite his entire filmography while he's out there enjoying some Haagen-Dazs.
That is true. He was great in what was the film that came out a couple years ago about the woman rising, and he was like a drug kingpin in the ward. She was like scamming all these different people. The hospital.
He was a drug kingpin?
Yes, it was one of my favorite movies I've seen in the last couple years. Who was it? It was the woman from
his filmography.
Mm-hmm. It was the woman from Gone Girl.
What's her name? She's got a funny sounding name. She's British.
Yes. The blonde. What's her name?
When did this come out, man?
This came out two to three. It's not I Think We're Alone Now. What is that? It came out probably 4 to 5 years. Oh, I Care a Lot. That's what it is. Oh, it came out last year.
The movie where she's scamming, she's doing elder abuse on a massive scale.
Yes. Peter Dinklage is a drug kingpin in that one.
Yes, I did not watch that. That stars Rosamund Pike.
Yes. It's fantastic. I think you would love it.
That, I mean, the funny thing is that movie is based on a New Yorker story. That ran about 5 years ago.
Mm.
the really, which drives my significant other to her wit's end, because she had the, like, she wrote the exact same, she covered a lot of the same territory in her, like, thesis at her, like, final, like, graduate thesis at Columbia, and then shopped it around and couldn't get anyone to bite. And then the New Yorker ran a very similar story. Not that the New Yorker wrote her stole her idea. Like, elder abuse is a wide and varied topic, but it took place in a lot of the same places. And she certainly didn't read my significant other's paper slash article and steal it. I just want to make that clear. I'm not accusing plagiarism. It's just that it bugs her because my girlfriend had, she had it. She had that New Yorker story, but you couldn't get anyone to bite on it. And so it makes her very upset. Sorry, honey.
Does she listen to the pod?
No. She gets to hear me talk a lot already, and I feel as though asking her to hear the sound of my voice for fun in her free time is probably not the kind of demand I should, and not the kind of stress I want to put on the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
it's,
fair.
It's hard enough to get her to read things that I write, especially when I write, you know, 10,000 words on YouTube doofuses. She's just like, okay, she, within the first 500 words, she goes, I got it. They're awful. Why do I need to read more? So you need to know why they're awful and how they're awful and the specifics of the awful things they do, the things that fascinate me, the things that I use to feed the brain worms in my head and keep them strong and well-nourished. But sometimes that's not her jam, so she doesn't read them. So sorry, Chase. My significant other is not a Chase Thomas podcast listener. I don't think I'll be able to win her over in any way, nor would I try.
That's okay. I get it. Okay. I get it.
Does
the sports renaissance woman? No.
Yes.
I don't think so. I think she does sometimes. I think it's more like what you said, where she gets enough of me because we live together, that, like, I don't think she needs, she gets
living together. It's like, all right, honey, I'm just going to hang out, read a book, and listen to you talk in my ear. About sports. No,
I don't think so. But so this naturally brings us to a piece on defector.com, a very good website that people should subscribe to if they have not already. I gave you some homework. I wanted to get your perspective.
I don't like that.
I know.
I don't like homework.
I know you don't.
I don't like, I read a great deal of a great many blogs and articles and pamphlets or.
Pamphlets? What pamphlets are you reading these days?
Yeah, we'll get into that another time.
Okay.
I read it. Yeah, it's about Ozzy. I mean, so what do you want to talk about, man? I'm almost Ozzy'd out these days. But I'm ready to go into it again.
Well, I just think it's interesting. I didn't really want to talk about Ozzy, just more of the general. It is interesting that, like, because this is something that I've thought about a lot with different people in my generation and seeing other, because I don't really view myself as an entrepreneur. I guess I kind of fall into that, but I would never put myself in that category because I think that doesn't really mean anything, and it's not really a I don't know, I just don't think writer podcast, I don't know, I don't think I'm an entrepreneur, but I can understand if my father described me as one to a friend of his, like I would understand like why he would do that. But I do think it's interesting where there's this fine line where in the piece, like, they outline, like, just, no, that was fraud. What you're doing is not lying, and there's nothing to faking it till you make it. And there is another way, which is not faking it until you make it. But there's this idea that's perpetuated by a lot of people. And I see this a lot in our young, with young people. It's just that, like, I know you're not that successful. I know the numbers are not there. And you act as though they are because you think that you're supposed to do that to get to a certain point.
Well, I think it's a couple of things.
It's really toxic.
There's a very low, well, it's reductive and silly to blame things on the internet. But unfortunately, I in this instance, I think the larger thrust in the last 20 years of this means of communication is that it, at its core, what people do on the internet, I'm not talking about, you know, media companies that publish stories or even, you know, commerce like Amazon and things like that. I'm not talking about the actual, you know, the clear-cut financial transactions that take place online, where the portion of the internet that is very clearly a marketplace. I'm talking about all the ways in which we interact with each other, social media, Facebook. Before that, IRL chat rooms, AOL chat rooms. All the ways in which the internet is purely a way for you to talk to other people. Strangers, often. Friends, relatives, doesn't matter. That portion of the internet, to me, the biggest, and this is in no way my original idea, I'm sure it's been said before and far better by people far smarter and better than me, is that what the internet asks you to do purely by the construct of how it functions as a means of communication is you become an advertising for yourself. What people do online is they are transforming themselves into a kind of a brand.
Mm-hmm.
What is the image of yourself that you, because by definition, because you're interacting with strangers for whatever percentage of the time, or even with friends and relatives, because you are doing that, you are always putting out, and because it is public, you are always crafting and selling an image of yourself that you would like the world to see. Now, we do that in our everyday one-to-one communications, too. Like, you're hanging out in a bar watching a Tennessee Volunteers football game or whatever, and you're not going to let all of your worst neuroses just spill out onto the countertop. You're not going to get into your deepest, darkest secrets. You're going to have a friendly image. You're going to try to dress well.
Well, it depends on the time. Is it 2 a.m. at this point?
right. But you are, but there's also the notion that whatever you do and say in that one-to-one or even group interaction will eventually fade. There is no record of it. But the internet, as everyone knows, is forever. So by definition, what people do is they advertise themselves. You become your own PR factory. And so, I think it's not surprising to me that people who, are digitally native to this and who grew up marinating in this, that they see themselves, but that of course their first instinct is to portray themselves as living a lifestyle of the rich and famous. Of course their first instinct is to say that they're succeeding beyond their own wildest dreams. Because what is the value then in saying, well, I just got out of school, I'm diddling around in some dead-end job, and I don't know what to do, But here are my top 5 TV shows for the month of October. There's no there's no payback for that.
Right.
Whereas selling yourself as being beautiful, successful, mildly famous, whatever, there is actual upside to that. It is shallow and vain and creates a world of lies. So there's a huge, colossal societal downside as well.
Right.
But on an individuated basis, of course people are going to do that. But I don't think it's a question of saying like, oh, well, Gary Vee told me about hustle culture and now I'm following his dictum, so I'm doing that. I think by definition, the internet becoming the dominant mode of communication for people necessarily leads to this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
it's so bad because there's just so many young kids who see, like, I don't know how we put this back in the bottle, right? Like, I think this is just out.
Going back in the tube, man.
Yeah.
That's it. This is it. We need to figure out how to modulate and make it better, but it's not, I don't think it's solvable. It would be like asking people suddenly to chuck out their phones and start screaming out the window to one another when they want to talk in 1975. It's just, you can't do it.
Yeah.
It can't be done. Like, it is the dominant mode of communication globally. And so barring some alien dropping down and turning off internet for us, I don't see how it's going to happen.
No.
But figuring out how to do it, look, for me, the problem is capitalism, but that's a question for another day. I think if you place people's priorities and self-worth away from something having to do with commerce and wealth, it might change. But that's a longer project, I think, and one that has never succeeded, ever. So,
we're going to pause here for a message from our sponsors.
From our sponsors!
We'll be right back. All right, we are back on the Sports Reporters Assembling Saturday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still joined by Robert Silverman of the Daily Beast. Go subscribe to the Daily Beast if you have not already done so. Yes, Bob?
Yeah, I know. I'm still here.
You are still here.
I go nowhere, man. I'm like, all right, what next? What's next on the agenda? Are there more things in the document? I didn't read that.
I know.
I already read the Defector blog, so mm-hmm. I just had to review it.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Pernenko is a good blogger.
He is.
His blogs are quite good.
You know the best? I still, like, my favorite writer, I still, like, my favorite sports writer, I should qualify, is still Ray Ratto. Huh. Like, I would read anything that man writes. He cracks me up, and I wish I could write like him. He is so good. I wish I could write like him.
He's feisty and salty.
Yes.
Mad about things.
But it's just good. It's so biting and so good, and I just, I don't know. I love Ray Ratto.
I think he weighed in on the latest fallout from the Washington football team, massive treasure trove of evidently, Jeff, I didn't even see this last night, mm-hmm. but Jeff Pasch, the NFL's preferred counsel at mm-hmm. Black, got caught up.
Hooters.
Yeah. getting specialty Hooters tickets or something. I didn't read through the whole thing. But the idea that the NFL's counsel would serve the interests first and foremost of the owners is, again, it's one of those things where, like, my favorite thing about, you know, John Gruden being a cretin is the big revelation, or
the people telling on themselves online.
Adam Schefter suddenly revealing that, like, actually he's just a stenographer for various power interests. It's like, yeah, that's all anyone who's been paying attention to professional football
mm-hmm.
for the last, I don't know, let's say 25 years is not going to be surprised by a single thing that comes out of that. But it is really nice to just see it in print where you can go, oh yeah, those guys, they serve at the interests of the wealthy and the powerful.
I yes.
mean, look, and Ratto, I bring this up because Ratto wrote something this morning where he said, like, look, the point of the NFL is to enrich the 32 people that own the teams, or 32 mm-hmm. conglomerate / people that own these teams. The fact that the games exist at all is almost irrelevant. The games are just basically how they funnel the money in, and they care about absolutely nothing else besides keeping that money flowing up the mountain to the top, and that nothing else matters. Absolutely nothing. Which, again, like, we've seen this in, you know, scandal after scandal in the NFL. Like, the idea, which came out, again, in the middle of, just like, 2020, where various people were like, you know, conservatives were like, I can't watch the NFL now because it's going too woke, or even when they sort of, you know, vaguely tolerated various kneeling protests, and they're like, oh no, the NFL's selling out to the social justice warriors. I'm like, they really don't. They are not, like, you're missing the point. The NFL mm-hmm. is not ideological.
I was going to say, the NFL is the hollowest of the hollow professional sports leagues.
They all are. I mean,
they are. I just think the NFL is the biggest and the most hollow. I still would, I would say that.
What was the phrase that someone used? It was describing the Tampa Bay Rays, and, you know, which had been a wildly successful Major League Baseball franchise relative to the amount of payroll they put out.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget who said it, so I apologize to whoever I'm stealing from. But they described them as a tech startup masquerading as a pro sports team,
mm-hmm.
which is absolutely true. Like, yes, they have maximized all manner of inefficiencies in the margins and used it to achieve wild success while keeping costs down. That is the definition of what, like, and they've achieved a fairly successful product considering all that. What is not a successful product, though, for the Tampa Bay Rays, which gets back to the same things that are in that Aussie article, is if you are a person living in Tampa, and I'm really sorry if that's where you've ended up.
Why did Tampa Bay residents catch a stray from Bob Silverman tonight? What? Leave them alone. People live where they live, Bob.
All right, you're right. Fine. It's a cheap shot. I apologize to the greater Tampa.
You might retire in Tampa Bay one day, Bob. Snowbirds.
But by the time I'm ready to retire, it's going to be underwater. So,
so right. What is the underwater? Go ahead.
For a youth or even a person of our age who is a diehard Tampa Bay Rays fan, you may enjoy whatever success exists now, but there is no way to build any kind of identification with anyone on the Tampa Bay Rays. Mm-hmm. The value of anyone, like by the time a single Tampa Bay Ray gets close to being paid what they deserve in return for their labor, they're going to be shuttled off to the Red Sox or something, or the Yankees or the Dodgers, in exchange for three other guys whose value can be maximized and shaped and uphold and wrung dry. So, I'm sure rooting for Chris Archer was awesome when he was great. So the same thing for David Price, and for all the people who are like, well, I hope
Rocco Baldelli, Fred McGriff.
I mean, this has been a recent development. I'm just talking about the last, 5 years. Once Friedman,
they kept Evan Longoria for a long time. They did keep Longoria around.
They did keep Longoria around, but Wander Franco. Okay, unless they can pull an Atlanta Braves and convince him to take some insanely stupid long-term sub-market deal.
Oh man, I still if you want to get on some Braves fans' bad sides, bring that up. But we all understand it was unethical what happened here, right? We all understand this is wrong. And they're well, we save money, and it's no. This was wrong. This is unethical. It made me feel uncomfortable when it happened in the moment.
Cunha and Ozzie Albies, do you like them? Do you like watching them? Mm. Great. Realize that the team that pays their salaries absolutely hosed them. And that by cheering on that submarket deal, you are in fact encouraging the Braves to do that again whenever the opportunity arises. Yeah, but okay, so Wander Franco. If you're a 12-year-old kid who suddenly thinks Wander Franco, who decides that Wander Franco is their best player, he's not going to be around for more than 5 years, maybe six.
Mm-hmm.
Why would, and again, the whole point of sports is not just, it can't just be about wins and losses and rings. It's about
making money.
Sense of, no. There has to be a value beyond just, again, eking out one more decimal point of wins above replacement from guy Y as opposed to guy X. Or else you're just watching the stock ticker. You might as well just get into Bitcoin. You might as well do that because it's a more self-evident grift for or NFTs because you're a huge fan of pump and dump schemes or money laundering because that's what the Tampa Bay Rays are at their core.
Which naturally brings us back to your piece on Adam Schefter.
Yes, I wrote a blog, everyone, on Adam Schefter. There's a lot about Adam Schefter that, Adam Schefter, this is not the, again, for those unfamiliar, Adam Schefter committed what is a fireable offense in many media companies, which is that he sent the entire article to a unnamed source for review prior to publication. And that source was Bruce Allen, who was then the general manager of the Washington football team. That gets people fired. You don't do that. And this isn't, some very high-minded ivory tower J-school remnant. It's because, look, anytime you write a story that is dealing with sources both on and off the record, or on the record and anonymous, those sources have agendas. And I say this, and I said this to people, when I say this when I've talked to sources, which is look, I know you're talking because you have a desired result. Sometimes that desired result is noble. Sometimes that desired result is entirely selfish on the part of the source. But people don't talk. People talk because they have a vested interest in doing so. My only job is to determine if what they're saying is true. The motivations are important. And if I feel like they are doing it out of some, sense of spite or vengeance or whatever, it's going to, call into question what they're saying. Absolutely. But when people talk, they have an interest. So the reason why you don't talk, why you don't let that person decide what's in your article is because your job is not to promote that source's interests. Your choice is to take all of the things that sources say and all of the research you do and all the information you have, put that together in a hopper and come to the closest approximation of the truth there is. And if you let the source do it, well, they're going to torque that in ways that benefit them. So that's why you don't do that. But Schefter, you know, look, this is no slight on the amount of work that Schefter does. His schedule is quite difficult. I could not keep up with him, no matter how many millions you paid me. I could not do it. I wouldn't.
It doesn't seem fun. Like that job, him, Shams, Woj, all these jobs seem awful.
A 24/7 grind. They work incredibly hard. But in addition to the amount of actual work and hours they have to put in, you have to just kiss up to the worst possible people imaginable, like Washington Football Team then general manager Bruce Allen. Like you have to make those people and you know that you are there to be their mouthpiece if they need it, so that they give you the kind of things that you can tweet out about, you know, the quarterback's arm being turned into hamburger and probably not suiting up this week.
Would you have a problem with what he does and what he's continued to do if he worked for the NFL Network, like NFL media?
I mean, I don't have a problem with what he does when he crosses lines. Do I have a problem with it? That's a tough question. Like, when he does things like allow a source to rewrite his edit to vet his copy, I got a problem with that. When he does things like invest in a gambling company where there's a clear conflict of interest about the subject he's supposed to be covering and where he's getting paid, that I have a problem with. When he does things like, you know, get put on the board of a feeder league to the NFL because who knows, it might chisel out another source or two, that I have a problem with. Here, the place where it gets into a tricky situation is, like, I read all of those, like, late-breaking, you know, scoop stories. I read the Woj bombs. I get the updates from, you know, Ken Rosenthal and all those people. I consume that product. So if I really had a problem with it, I could simply mute all those guys and find out about what happened 2 minutes later when the team issues a press release.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I'm not sure if there's a way to do the job as it currently exists without getting incredibly, like, getting too friendly with power. I think it's fine, though. Honestly, I think as long as people don't say, well, he's a reporter, that he does PR.
That's what I was going to say, that's what I'm saying. And that was my broader point of just, like, if he just was working for NFL digital media.
Part of ESPN's job is to promote the National Football League.
They
are a broadcast partner of the National Football League. They make more money if the NFL is more popular, or the NHL, or Major League Baseball, you know, or the NBA, or any number of the leagues that they broadcast. Those leagues succeeding is in their best of interest. There is a mutual interest there. So that is, I mean, and I mentioned this in the article, which is that this has been at the core of the issue for ESPN or CBS or Fox or NBC or any institution that exists to both broadcast and promote sports leagues, but also wants to have a vertical or a section of its company whose job it is to also aggressively cover those leagues. Sometimes in a way that is adversary, sometimes in a way that will cause those leagues shame or financial harm even. And how you do both without one compromising the other, well, that's sort of been the problem with ESPN from the jump, or as soon as they started acquiring those broadcast rights and simultaneously decided they were going to get into prestige, glossy mag journalism type stuff. That became a tension that I don't think is necessarily resolvable. So, you know, look, Adam Schefter, no one expects, to put it in a similar way, no one expects Tony Romo to do breaking news that's going to hurt the Cowboys, right? But Tony Romo is an excellent color commentator and analyst. I enjoy watching Tony Romo. I think it's okay to enjoy watching Tony Romo. There's nothing wrong with that. Tony Romo's job is to analyze and promote the NFL. That's Schefter's job also. So I think as long as you just don't think that he is, you know, calling them scoops or Woj bombs or whatever, that's the sort of category mistake. It's advertising. And advertising is also not an easy job. It is difficult to do well. And when it's done well, I think it's worth promoting. It's just, you know, it's well compensated. And sometimes it requires a certain degree of, you know, requires you to do some to get your feet wet, feet dirty, hands dirty. Hands dirty and feet wet. It leaves you dirty and wet. That's not a good combination. But yeah, that's a long-winded, long-form itself way of saying. I just don't think, you know, if you like reading Schefter's news updates because you want to place a wager or because you're worried about who to start in daily fantasy sports, that's entirely fine. I know I do it. I would be a massive hypocrite if I said I didn't do that. And my fantasy team is in real trouble. Are we getting to fantasy sports minute yet? I want to talk about the issues with my fantasy football league team.
Oh, yeah, this is the fantasy football minute.
Kamara has been underperforming.
Okay. I didn't know this was the slander former Tennessee greats portion of the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly the worst good fantasy player starting QB since Blake Bortles, many people are saying.
But he's actually good. No, Blake Bortles was never good. No, Hurts is good. Hurts wasn't the problem last night. He had some good throws. Moving down the pocket, there was just no one open.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
He had some good throws?
Yeah.
He had the two-point conversion.
He had that to Rager down the left side deep early. I don't know. He didn't really have a lot to work with.
He underthrew, so it resulted in a pass interference. And the other throw, the result of pass interference. He had one really nice throw to Devonta Smith over the middle. And aside from that, I was royally unimpressed.
Mm.
But at the same time, I was quite thankful at the 24 fantasy points that I got from his starting effort because he scooted for two touchdowns on the ground.
Mm.
Like, if anybody thought let's put it this way. Nobody thought that Jalen Hurts was going to win a duel with Tom Brady in that game, regardless of what kind of effort the Philadelphia Eagles defense put forth.
Stephen A. had a strong take about why Zach Ertz was such a great move for the Cardinals today. And I was thinking...
He's a kind of washed tight end. I'm not exactly sure why that's so valuable.
Basically Max Williams got knocked out for the year last week for Cardinals.
Oh, he did. I didn't notice that.
So it was the
way Dan Arnold.
And people were just like, oh, they're loading up. It's like, well, no, they're filling a hole.
They got a replacement level tight end.
Yeah, like, that's not loading up. This is not an example of the Cardinals loading up.
Sherman mentioned this on Twitter. I think the real problem is that they're splitting up the rhyming QB tight end combos. Like, they broke up Arnold and Darnold, and now we're losing Hurts and Ertz. Because that kind of rhythmic synergy is too powerful for the NFL to handle, so it had to be done away with. Good tweet, Roger. Good one.
Your pick of the week, Bob.
I won't mention the adult video survey that highlights preferences in Tennessee.
Wasn't that proven to be false? That Kevin James was not actually the lead search?
All of those are false. All of those, the most popular. That is Twitter engagement bait. Instagram engagement bait. I don't know because I don't look at Instagram that much. But they're always based on the world's shoddiest data methodology. Pay no attention to that. They want you to get mad about that. They want people in Tennessee to get mad about the fact that they're looking up erotic images of Kevin James, which they're not.
I wasn't mad. I understood.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't do that. Never.
I don't.
No. No. No one's saying you are.
Mm-hmm.
We're in agreement. My pick of the week is I'm excited for my what I'm going to be doing Sunday night, hunkered down in front of the TV with my subscription to HBO Now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can probably guess which show I'm talking about.
I don't, actually. HBO Now or HBO Max?
Dun, 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 dun.
What is that?
Succession. It's the Succession season kicks off on Sunday.
I've never watched it. Is it good?
Who will get a kiss from Daddy? It's an outstanding show. It's an outstanding show about, let us say, a rapaciously capitalistic family eating each other alive. I like it. I like it.
I might watch this. I need to add it to the list.
I said this, I was explaining this also, not to make my significant other the focus of this pod or anything like that, but we're discussing this.
You're really trying to get her to tune into the pod. You're going to be like, hey, I talked about you a lot this week. You should check it out.
It is my theory that there are actually only about four different kinds of TV shows, and they all fit into one broad category.
Okay.
Number one is Copaganda, which covers everything from, say, you know,
Strays for Blue Bloods over here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Blue Bloods, CBS procedurals, CSI.
Mark Harmon just left, though. NCIS after 18 years.
I've never accessed that the entire one. Bones counts under this. Law and Order. Every police. I mean, if you want to get really deep into the weeds here, the Avengers is Copaganda. But that aside, Copaganda is one. Problematic Men is another version of show that is quite popular. Mm. Your Breaking Bads, your Wires, your Sopranos is basically all the shows built around an antihero. You know, The Shield, shows about people who commit horrible crimes, but are also sort of charming, and you watch how their horrible crimes play out. It's connected to Copaganda because, by definition, all of the Problematic Men are dealing with the cops. And the third one is Sexy White People with Issues.
Mm.
And Succession, of course, is a Sexy White People with Issues shows and a Problematic Men show.
Hmm.
You will have occasionally diverse shows which fall outside of this rubric. We can also talk, you know, family-based sitcoms is another largely broad category. Which again can accommodate a wider and more diverse array of programming than the Sexy White People with Issues shows and or the Problematic Men's or the Copaganda. But those are the four main ones, and they all to some degree fall in that category. But Succession is a very, very fun and enjoyable Sexy White Issues / Problematic Men show. I like it, and I'm excited to watch.
Wait, so where does my pick of the week, Midnight Mass, fall in this?
I have not seen it. Is that a horror show?
It's very
good.
You would like it.
What's it about?
Well, I can't really spoil it because, like, if I go into details, like, it's just a.
Does it involve Rosamund Pike at all in any way? No.
No.
Okay.
No, but it's quite good. If you liked, did you ever see Hereditary?
No, that. I'm not a big horror guy.
Okay, well, it's not really horror. It's more about, like, what humans are capable of when they fall victim to religious zealotry and just kind of...
Sounds to me like a Problematic Men's show.
Problematic People show. Yeah.
Oh, how very.
Mm-hmm. I would recommend it. It's very good. It's very good. We just wrapped it up this week, so maybe we'll add Succession to what's next.
There's a lot of lore, so it may be tough to pick up in the middle of season three.
No, I mean, we'll even start from the beginning.
Yeah. It is not a prestige type show. It is a soap opera. It absolutely operates on the beats of a soap opera. And there's nothing wrong with soap operas. They're quite enjoyable and popular for a reason. It is a well-written, occasionally ridiculously crafted soap opera. And well-acted also. Generally very well-performed. Quite ridiculous at times and melodramatic as hell. But, you know, if you like soap operas, if you enjoyed Dynasty in Dallas before you were born, that kind of thing, those are the beats that it hits.
I was more of a Matlock guy.
Yeah, it is an update. The Copaganda. It is an updated version. Matlock is Copaganda.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
No, no. Leave Matlock alone. What about Andy Griffith's show?
The Andy Griffith Show is a sitcom.
Okay.
Familial sitcom. The familial sitcom, which includes both office-based and actual sort of home-setting Leave It to Beaver types, is about a normalization of the nuclear family unit. The normalization of the Judeo-Christian family unit as being the dominant and good form of sociological interaction. That's the norm that reinforces. Like The Office. The Office does that as well. Or Cheers. Or any of those. They're about promoting that all at the same time. King of Queens is in that as well. Just to hit some familiar notes for you. But yes, Succession is a slightly more updated, more slinging Veep and or the thick of it type insults at each other version of Dynasty or Dallas. But, you know, like I said, people love those shows. The entire country wanted to know who shot JR back in the day.
Hmm. Bob Silverman. We can find you on Twitter at Bob Saeta. Read you in the Daily Beast. So go subscribe to the Daily Beast if you have not already done so. Bob, I will talk to you and hopefully Andrew next week.
Sounds good, man. I'll be here.
All right, the Atlanta sports guys, we are back because it is Saturday on the Chase Thomas podcast, where new episodes of the Atlanta sports guys pop up on this feed along with Sports Reporters Assemble. I am here, as I am every Saturday, by fellow Atlanta sports guys, Max Markovich, firmly cemented into that number one status. Max, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Happy Saturday. Also here, I guess, the strong number two, the man who has gone to more Atlanta sports games this year than Max and I in our entire lives, Garrett Chapman is here. Garrett, how are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. I just bought tickets for game two, so feeling even better.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. No, as soon as they dropped it, I was like, I just sort of like made an executive decision. My girlfriend and I were just like, you know, screw it. We're just going to go. I bought the cheapest one possible. And I'm going to go stand in the chop house and have a great time. I'm really excited.
How does that work?
Because I'm in Athens on Saturday, so I'm like, all right, so that won't work. So I was trying to think through it, man.
Are you going to the game on Saturday too?
No, I did not swing those. Those are a little out of my price range, unfortunately. I think those are up to, I think the cheapest seats that I could find were like $140 a piece, and I think that's before fees and everything. So, not great.
No, and it's not worth it. Considering you're favored by 20, is the over under right now 20?
It's pretty high. It's pretty high. So it's like, but she went to Kentucky. So we're gonna go and have a great time.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. A little rough.
Okay. Okay.
But it'll be fun. She's never been to Athens, so it'll be a great time.
Never been to Athens. Okay.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
There you go. Who does Michigan play this weekend, Max?
Michigan's got a huge game against Bye.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I seem to recall every single week we get on here and you declare it the week Michigan's going to lose. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I should take a moment to say what a gutty win for the University of Michigan Wolverines last week on the road. 6-0. Going to the
I will say, it was... It was a gutsy win. It was good. I was impressed. It was an impressive win. I will give you that, Max Markovich. It was an impressive win. Both of our teams are rolling at the moment. It's pretty solid. It's pretty solid, and I'm excited for Saturday night. But what I'm not excited for, fellas, is that Tennessee and the Atlanta Braves are playing at the same time on Saturday night, which I don't like it. I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I haven't decided how I'm going to handle this.
It's the year 2021. You could get two screens going.
See, I'm an anti-two screen guy. This is the problem.
I know you are, but this is a special occasion.
Yeah, it's a unique situation where I might have to go to the laptop on one and the TV. Now, what would y'all do? Would you put the Braves on the main TV, or would you put the which one would you do? Would you do Tennessee on the main TV or the Braves? Well,
the fireworks are definitely going to come from Ole Miss in Tennessee, right? So mm-hmm. that's a race.
Yeah.
The over-under is 82. 82.
Jesus Christ.
Neither of these defenses are worth a half damn, and both of these offenses are top five in the SEC. So this is going to be a fun. I was actually putting together my rundown for tomorrow morning for our college football game time show that I do at 92.9, and it was like just the race to 50. That's it. Because these guys are going to be, it's going to be fireworks all day.
Mm-hmm. There are going to be fireworks outside of the stadium too, because they encouraged a hostile environment for Lane Kiffin's return. So downtown Knoxville, folks, I would encourage you to stay away, because Saturday night is going to be arrest central. It's supposed to rain. That's the reason I'm not going to this, because I didn't want to go by myself, because we would have had to get tickets for the Sports Renaissance Women to also go. And I was like, I don't really want to use my free ticket to go by myself, sit in the rain in this crazy environment with the Braves playing too. I was like, I'm going to watch this one in the confines of my home here and just enjoy the Braves and the Vols separately. And I am curious at how disastrous Knoxville is on Saturday. Like, people are going to be able to tailgate from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. It is going to be incredible. And the amount of Ole Miss fans making the trip, it's just, I don't even want to begin. I mean, look, shout out to the Vol Squirrel. I'll miss him on Saturday, but outside of that, I don't know. It seems like a good stay away option, because it is just going to be, like, I just hope Hodges, the library, is still open on Sunday so I can finish up some homework. That's really what I would hope, that it does not fall depending on how the game goes on Saturday. But I'm excited. This is just going to be so much fun.
Sneaky huge game for Heupel.
I think it's a bigger game for Kiffin. I think they need this more than the Vols do right now.
I'd pick Ole Miss to win this game, but the thing is, it's like Tennessee, man. Tennessee seems like one of those teams that's like, if you aren't 100% ready to go in there, they will dump some points on you.
We're the best first quarter team in the country.
This just sounds like a perfect game to go to, but I mean, I don't know. That's just me, though.
It's going to be rainy, chilly, and the Braves are on, too. I don't know. It's just a lot in play. I think the bigger game for Heupel this year is the Kentucky game. After this, on the road in Lexington, because if they win that is a much bigger win.
This feels more gettable,
yes,
in my opinion.
Oh, you think this feels more gettable than Kentucky? No, yeah, I would say Kentucky,
yeah,
for
on
sure.
On the road, yeah. No, the spread's 2.5. That tells you, like, Vegas kind of has a feeling here.
Okay.
Tennessee can take care of business at home.
I don't disagree.
I like Tennessee here.
I don't disagree. But we shall see. I'm not going to get too involved there. But then we still have Georgia and Alabama on the calendar in the next month. So that's going to be fun. Guys, we've been wondering when Kyle Pitts was going to start making some moves, when Arthur Smith and Matt Ryan and company were going to start targeting their first round pick. This coming from PFF's Mike Renner, friend of the show. Quote, he's now on pace to go for 1,047 yards as a rookie, which would put him right in the range of Mike Ditka's rookie tight end record of 1,076 yards. What did you make of Pitt's coming out party over the weekend? And do you think this is something that we should just expect for the rest of the season, that Kyle Pitts is going to be a target machine, Max?
Yeah, I mean, all it took was every single receiver on the roster not play. No, I'm kidding. I do. I think this is a lot more in line with the Kyle Pitts we're going to see. I think we probably should take Arthur Smith at his word when he kept saying they're bringing him along, and sort of unleashed him when he's ready. And I think it's actually sort of a bit of a metaphor, like sort of a parallel track to how this offense is, like the trajectory the offense is on generally. Which is, we've talked about, like, when can we get worried about Arthur Smith? And is it fair at all to get worried about Arthur Smith? And I think, you know, it was the Jets. And before that it was Washington. And but I think we're seeing sort of an upward trajectory that we would like to see from a first-year offensive head coach like that. And I think Matt Ryan's been much better. Pitts is growing into his role. Cordarrelle Patterson's the best player in the NFL. I think this is a lot more in line with the team that I expected to see this year, which is probably like a 7 or 8 win team. But the signs from the offense are really good. And Pitts is sort of a bellwether for the trajectory there, which is, I think he's going to continue it. I do take a lot of those tight end records with a grain of salt, because it's like, what was the tight end position before, like, Tony Gonzalez, really? So if he breaks that record, yeah, it'll be cool. But I don't think it's like, means he's suddenly going to be the GOAT or anything. But that's a little bit beside the point. I do think Pitts is going to be a 1A, 1B focal point if we ever get Kelvin Ridley back of the offense going forward. And I think that's a really good thing.
Garrett, what do you think?
Well, I'm also just taking a look. I went to StatMuse just to check out what the records look like, with the top 10, top 15 for the receiving records for rookies at tight end. And truth be told, like, if he's not top 10 by like week nine or something, like, then I don't think I have no idea what Arthur Smith is doing. I mean, like, cause, I mean, look at this. If he cracks 600, he's already top 10 pretty much.
Where does OJ Santiago fall on this list?
Let me see.
Reggie Kelly, Michael Palmer. I'm listing all kinds of great.
We got Dick. For one, but that's also stood since 1961. I mean, and you got Jeremy Shockey, like,
oh,
back that like there's some impressive names on this list, and like he's going to be in with good company. But I fully expect him to be in that 700-800 yard range, especially if Calvin Ridley is continuing to stay out. Russell Gage continues to stay out. I mean, look, I was listening to the station yesterday, and they were saying like there's a lot of speculation as like what's going on with Calvin Ridley. I mean, I'm getting a little bit more and more concerned. Like the more we go on, the less information that we get for this. It's like, is he going to be on this roster November 3rd? I see a very realistic possibility that he does get traded. I think we talked about this last week, but if he does get traded, records don't matter all that much necessarily, but it's like he would certainly beat this record because, like Max said, like he is the mouth to feed. And that's pretty much it. Him and what, Cordell Patterson, I guess. But I think he's definitely going to break this record. I think it's a sign of good things because he's a guy who we need to continue to feature in this offense. He's one of the best players on this football team. And when he does well, I think the team does well. My biggest concern, though, it was illustrated in this Jets game, is look, this defense it's not closing very effectively. It's not doing the little things right. Yes, they finally got an interception. That was great. But really, all in all, like this defense is a little bit concerning. Dean Pease hasn't necessarily been all that great necessarily. And I feel like he spent more time calling out the media than he has getting his defense ready to play. I mean, like, come on. Like, you can't give up that many points if you get the Jets. But look, I mean, I think this team is, like Max said, like seven, eight wins. I think they're well on that pace. I think that's achievable. And if Kyle Pitts hits that 1,000-yard threshold, then I think that's perfectly possible.
And I think even more than the numbers with Pitts is the way they're starting to use him. And like the touchdown he scored, like that is a touchdown. I feel like we can see him like that exact route from that exact position against that exact type of player is a touchdown we're going to be able to see from him over the next decade. And so that's exciting. And the post route to clinch the game, where he just like dusts a corner and then carries the safety. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Like that's stuff tight ends can't do. Like Darren Waller, like that's kind of it. I mean, Kelsey, whatever. But the point being, like, I don't even – these tight end records and these tight end numbers don't mean anything because Kyle Pitts is so different from so many tight ends that have come out of the league. And his over-under for yards, I think, was 800 coming into the year.
Mm-hmm.
I would be stunned if he doesn't go over that. Like, really, really stunned. I did bet it at the beginning of the year.
Ooh.
So I am biased. But
do you have any other preseason
if he
bets?
Get to 1,000.
Did you make any other Falcons preseason bets?
No.
Okay.
I just thought that number was low. And because they set those numbers based on like precedents from tight ends mostly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a little bit of a different case. Yeah. I don't know if we want to get into the Ridley stuff because we still have not heard anything about any of that. Have we?
Yeah. But I think too, Ridley. Okay. So like when you look at just the wide receiver talent and like Justin Jefferson right away, Jamar Chase being the winning rookie of the year this year, Devontae Smith, what he has done. You look up and down the list, it's like if there was ever a situation where you're like, okay, yeah, if this is it for Calvin Ridley, that like it's not a bummer because like the Falcons are not, it would be much more of a problem if Julio was still in this group and we were still going for a Super Bowl run. Like this would be a bad look, and this would be a lot more of a problem.
I think it's a real problem. Well, like, I mean, I think we're taking it. First of all, I think we're taking it a step beyond what we know right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've been given no reason to think that the Falcons are going to trade Calvin Ridley, other than trying to connect a few loose dots.
Mm-hmm.
And but I do think it's a problem. I mean, this offense is. Without Calvin Ridley is what? It's our two running backs,
yeah.
And it's Kyle Pitts. And Matt Ryan has looked a lot better, and I think we should talk about that. But, like, there's not much to work with beyond that. Russell Gage, when he's played, has not been a wide receiver, too, in any real capacity this year. All those other guys are kind of just gadget guys. Mm-hmm. And so it's Cordarrelle Patterson, and it's Kyle Pitts, and then it's Mike Davis running the ball.
I don't disagree with that. I guess what I'm saying is it's not about like I understand like the week to week problems of not having Calvin Ridley and what that poses for this offense and Matt Ryan. But what I'm saying is on a larger scale, Ridley not being a part of this season because they're not playing for anything. They're playing for 8 to 9 wins, 7 wins, whatever it is. They're not playing for the same thing that the Bucks are playing for this year. So yeah, it would help Matt Ryan, and it feels like a wasted prime year for Matt Ryan. But at the same time, if Pitts is still developing and you look around the league and just, you can replace Calvin Ridley pretty easily. Like you can, we could find a replacement next year in the first round of the draft, and it would just be, and they would contribute right away. Like right away. We're just seeing that across the board.
We really got to replenish the talent on defense before we do any of that. Like that's true. That's kind of the thing is like you have, they're going to have resources, but you still have finite resources. And Calvin Ridley is, when healthy, one of the 10-ish best receivers in the NFL, I think. And like that's certainly, they could replace him. That's kind of what they did with Ridley replacing Julio eventually, but that requires spending like premium capital that like we can't afford to use after we spent the fourth pick on a tight end this year. And like we're talking about the defense, like I don't fault DMPs for anything. Like the talent on this defense is so drained. Like this is a really, really bad defensive roster. And so anything better than, like, you know, 30th in defensive DVOA this year is, like, probably a win given the roster.
Garrett, what do you think?
I don't know. I just had expectations of DMPs coming in and doing at least a little bit better than what we're seeing right now. I mean, I want to be better than 26th in the NFL in sacks. You know, I mean, like, I get this. You are correct. Like this defense is devoid of talent. Like when you go out and you have to go have like stopgap safeties that you have to go grab on 1 year deals, like that's not a good sign for your defense. But it's just disappointing. It's just disappointing. My hope was that we were going to have maybe like a 20th ranked defense, but that's just seeming more and more kind of foolish to think. But I don't know. The schedule is going to get tougher. And I think this defense is only going to be—it's only going to get more and more exposed. I just haven't seen the week-to-week improvements necessarily that I really hope to.
Yeah. NLCS predictions, guys. So the Braves officially made the NLCS thanks to Freddie Freeman launching an eighth-inning homer. If you have not already, go check out Ben Ingram and Joe Simpson's call reaction on video to that, friend of the program, Ben Ingram. About that, but off Josh Hader, it was pretty miraculous. This has just been great run. Solaire's absence ultimately did not do in the Braves, as we joked about, like, oh, of course this would be a variant Atlanta ending. Here I was hoping we would get the Giants, who were eliminated last night thanks to a blown check swing call. If there's one thing we love in professional sports, it's when the officials and the umpires get to be a big part of the game. And yeah, so we get the Dodgers again, folks, and I don't feel great about it. I think this is a bad matchup. The Dodgers are a better team on paper. They're obviously the defending champs, and we know how last year ended. I am not one of those people who are like, oh, I love the challenge. Let's rise up and avenge last season. No, give me Logan Webb. Give me Kevin Gausman. Give me what the Giants are throwing out there, actually. Let me just avoid the Dodgers altogether, actually. But that does not happen. The Dodgers are favored to win the series. I would be pretty, 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 pretty floored if the Braves did it and pulled it off. But that being said, this is fun. It's all, like, I don't think any of us thought that this team would make the NLCS before the season. Or, I mean, just... It's been a long year, I guess, maybe not even before the season, this summer, and where we were at months ago. I don't think any of us could have seen an NLCS run coming. But now that it's set, Braves, Dodgers, do you think it was the best situation for the Braves to get the Dodgers, or do you think it was the worst case scenario, Garrett?
I mean, look, we're talking about two teams that won, including the postseason, at least 109 games. So... I mean, regardless of who came out of that series, we were not going to be favored. But at the end of the day, it's like, look, I mean, they don't have Clayton Kershaw. They don't have Bauer. They don't have Bauer. Then, I mean, like, look, it's. I'm not saying that the Braves are going to be favored, but it's like we do have home field advantage. But I don't know. I'm trying to talk myself into it. No, it's a feel-good story that the Braves have made it this far. I don't expect them to win this series. If they make it a competitive series, I think that's good. And one of the best things about this is that they're going to be on short rest coming from the West Coast. And Scherzer pitched that final inning. It was a high stress inning. You have Max Fried, who's pitching some of the best baseball of his life right now. I think his 1.74 ERA since the All-Star break. Charlie Morton has shown that he's a good postseason pitcher. Ian Anderson pitched out of his damn mind in the postseason. And look, if we can win those three starts, if we can consistently win games with those three on the mound, then I would give the Braves a punching chance. But I'm just not 100% convinced that we have the star power to match up with them without Ronald Acuna and Marcelo Ozuna, like those guys that we lost, and Soler too. So I think it's just going to be a little bit too much. They just have so much star power. That bullpen is spectacular. And even on short rest, even missing those two, the $75 million worth of arms in that starting rotation, they still way overmatch us on paper. But we also said something along those lines last year, and they took them seven games and they should have won that series. So I'm not going to count the Braves out yet. They've proved us wrong all season long, and they have home field advantage. As long as Max Fried, Charlie Morton, and Ian Anderson can go out there and pitch good baseball the way they have been pitching, then I'm going to give them a punching chance. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be very, very tough.
Hmm. Max, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I was reading Jeff Schultz's column in the Athletic, and I thought he referenced the time he was talking to a boxing trainer before the Evander Holyfield Mike Tyson fight, the first one. And he asked him whether he was picking Tyson to win, and he said, "Yeah, probably, but Evander is one of those guys who you just never feel comfortable picking against." So it's like, yeah, you know, the Dodgers, you can't not pick the Dodgers in this series, I think. I saw Garrett tweet out the ESPN thing where 11 of the 13 ESPN people picked the Dodgers in this series, and it's like, of course. Like, if you compare the series on paper, like, it's not – there's no way you come to the – I don't think there's a way you can really come to the conclusion that the Braves are going to win it. But, like, that's not how baseball works, and, like, you know – it's possible. It's not impossible. And I think that it's just sort of emblematic of the gap between like the royalty in baseball, the elite, the teams with insane payrolls, and kind of like everyone else. And that's sort of why you wanted the Giants, right? Like on paper, the talent isn't the same. So no, I'm not picking the Braves, but they're not a team that you want to pick against right now. Like they're playing really good baseball. When Freddie hit that home run, it was kind of like just the clearest, like, oh, they're just gonna pay him. Like, they can't let him walk. After the last, you know, however many years, like, you don't just, like, let that guy walk, what he's meant to the franchise. It's a little bit of house money, but I also think saying that cheapens this accomplishment in this moment a little bit. Like, here we are again, NLCS, and sure, you're probably not supposed to win on paper, but it's the Dodgers again. But like, this is a chance again to go to the World Series and win it. And crazier things have happened, and I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, we're gonna enjoy it, right? There's no way to not enjoy it. I think this will just be a fun ride, and I am so curious to see who steps up. It's the Jock Peterson revenge series. We can't understate how important that is. The absence of Max Muncy should play a role, but I don't know. I think this is just it's just gonna be fun to go against them and just be a fan and be like, okay, like the back's against the wall. Let's see what happens here. We're not favored. It would be an upset, but nothing to lose. And I don't think anybody can be upset about where the Braves have gotten to at this point. So it's not even the pressure isn't even on to win this series. It was just enjoy and let's just see what happens. And if Austin Riley can pull some more Chipper Jones throws from third base that he pulled off in that last series. I don't know. Austin Riley's emergence just continues to just baffle and discombobulate me week over week, because we all know how Max and I felt about Austin Riley coming into the year.
Whoa.
Max Markovich. Max underscore Markovich.
This is recorded. We could go back.
MIP, baby. Most improved player.
Mm.
What I said.
There you go. The Atlanta Hawks. Let's wrap up with the Hawks. The regular season is almost here. I sent you all a tweet from Nikias Duncan, a great NBA writer for Basketball News, also the host, co-host of the Dunker Spot. So go check that out if you've not already. But He tweeted out, if Cam Reddish's three ball is real, Nate McMillan's got, I think, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was like Nate McMillan's basically got a problem on his hands. Cam Reddish's preseason is a delight as a long-term, long-time Cam Reddish defender and stan. It's been great to see. And my thing was, I don't think it's a Nate McMillan, like, I don't think this is as big of a problem as, like, other people might think, just because of what we talked about is the injury stuff, where it's like, no, like, this is okay. Like, he doesn't have to make these choices now because the Hawks are still banged up, and having Reddish to fill those minutes is okay right now. It's not like DeAndre and Bogey and Herter and all, like, everybody's 100% at the moment. It's not true. So I think he will have an opportunity that he may not have had if everybody was healthy, but Reddish is Reddish season is here, and the Hawks picked up his and Hunter's option, I think, today. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about Reddish. Guys, I want to get into predictions, though, that we can also, speaking of things on tape, let's get these on tape. Garrett, the Atlanta Hawks regular season record this season will be what?
I pegged this team. I think I actually have this on Twitter too. I think this is a 53 win team. I think it's a 53 team. I think that's perfectly achievable, and that would peg them maybe around the four seed, three, four seed maybe. I think that's adequate. I mean, they could maybe push a little bit higher, especially if you have load management from other teams. Like, you have Kyrie Irving, who I'm not convinced that Kyrie Irving's not going to play for the Nets this year. I think that they're going to figure something out. He's going to be back and playing in a Nets uniform. Ben Simmons, he's going to come back and play, but it's like, I don't know what he did to the chemistry. So it's like, there are a couple lingering questions for other teams that I think that if those continue to hang over their heads, I could potentially see the Hawks rise a little bit in those standings. But I think 53 wins, I think, is pretty much where they slot in.
Okay. I don't hate that. I have 51 for the record. I'm going to say 51 wins. Max, what about you?
I was literally about to say 52.
Oh,
which is a problem. I'm going to go 54. Screw it. I'm going to go 54. I'm going to press
54
right
wins.
Yeah, I think this team, I just keep saying it, I think this team is really, really, really damn good, especially as a regular season team this year. And I think they're going to be the 2 seed. And I've flirted on here with saying they're going to be the 1 seed. I think it's possible. I think the Bucks are the 1 seed. I think the Nets are going to be the 3 seed. Man, like, we also forget, and when we talked about the depth, we also forget that this is yet another short offseason. And what that really means, especially for the Hawks, who were playing deep into the playoffs not that long ago. And so that depth is going to be insanely valuable. And just, like, I don't even see it as at all a problem at this point. Like, the luxury to be able to play, you know, Trey limited minutes in some games, sit him, you know, sit DeAndre Hunter if you want, sit John Collins, let Capella work his way back from injury fully. Like, all of these things, they have so many options. And I don't even think probably. They're the deepest team in the East. And that's, like, that's just so, as a regular season team, like, this team is going to come out firing. And I really still think they're being slept on sort of nationally. Like, this is, I think it's a legitimate, especially with what's going on in Brooklyn. Like, there's a non-zero chance this team is playing in the NBA Finals this year. And I don't see the, like, I think the narrative of, like, oh, like, playoffs was a fluke, they'll come back to Earth is just kind of ignoring what happened all of last year. And it's not based on anything empirical. So I think they're a 54-win team. I think the 2 seed, I think the Bucks have a huge year. I think the Bucks are the 1 seed.
Did y'all actually, speaking of like that depth, did y'all watch the game yesterday or follow it at all?
I did not.
Saw clips.
Yeah, same. I'm not watching a full preseason game. I can't do it.
Oh, I had to. So I was running Hawks Radio Network over at the studio, and so I was like following along with everything. Holy hell, Trae Young. They probably played like this. This is like legitimately like the, this is probably the last preseason game. So they threw in their what was the probable starting lineup for next week when they're taking on the Mavericks. And these guys look absolutely just fantastic. All of them do. And the thing is, like, they sub guys off the floor, and then you come in and you have absolutely no drop off. And Max, like you said, like, the depth of that, like, that is such a luxury in the NBA, that you have no drop off pretty much anywhere. As long as Trae Young's on the floor, the team's always going to be better. But he does come off the floor. It's not like you're lacking options. And that screams elite in the NBA, especially, like you said, on the short season, which actually I didn't even think about. The youth of this team and the depth, that's going to be extremely valuable. So I'm just really excited for the team. It's going to be very good.
Think about it like this. When the Hawks are fully healthy this year, their second unit is going to be, could be, DeLon Wright at point guard, Kevin Huerter, Cam Reddish, Danilo Gallinari, and Onyeka Okongwu. Would that team be like the 10 seed in the East, the 9 seed? That's a really good five.
That's incredible. That's the playoff team in the Eastern Conference, and that's your that's your second squad. So the depth of the team cannot be overstated, like you said.
I agree. Most improved Hawk will be who? Max Markovich.
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot.
I'm not, because it was in the rundown.
I know. I forgot to read it. You know, like, you know, I'm just gonna say it. I don't care about the injury. Onyeka Okongwu. I think he's gonna be a star. I think he's gonna be an NBA star at some point. And so, if I think he's gonna be an NBA star, I know he's hurt right now. I know that's really not ideal. And I know that's his second injury in 2 years in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I watching what he did in the playoffs last year was like earth-shattering for me. He is the perfect center to play with Trae Young, and I think his skills fit perfectly in the modern NBA. And so if I think he's going to be a star, I think the second year is when it happens. And it's not a like super convenient pick, just because even when he comes back, his minutes are going to be limited. He's not going to start. He's probably not going to get many shot opportunities, at least at first. But I just think that guy's going to be so good. I think he's eventually the second most valuable piece on this team. And I'm bummed that he's hurt, but I'm really excited to see sort of what this year could be for him.
Okay. I like it. That's a good pick. It's a good pick. Garrett, what about you?
See, I think you're going to pick Cam Reddish.
Who, me?
Like, so I'm assuming.
I don't know why you would assume that.
Does he like Cam Reddish?
I was going to say, Max, he seems a little presumptuous here. You're really, really, overstepping your bounds a little bit here, throwing that out there and how I feel about Cam Reddish, but continue.
See, I could also see it being, but that's one of the crazy things is, like, we could all three have completely different answers and all three are correct answers. That shows how much you on this team and how much better they could potentially be. You're going to say Cam Reddish. I'm going to go out and throw, let's say DeAndre Hunter, just because I think he's going to be healthy. I think that the health is going to come back around. And even if he doesn't play a complete season, like even if he comes out and plays 65, 70 games, I think we're going to start seeing him get into a flow if he can stay healthy. Like, that's the big thing. So if he stays healthy, plays 70 games or so, I think you're going to see a guy who can put 18 points and play elite defense. And that in the modern NBA is just absolutely invaluable. I mean, especially as a perimeter defender, I mean, the guy can do it all. And he showed that against Julius Randle in the first round of the playoffs. And I think with a full season, if he's healthy and he can actually stay in rhythm with everybody else in this offense, the sky is the limit for that guy. And there's a reason we took him with a third overall pick. And I think if he can stay healthy this year, he can certainly be that guy. But then one sort of like off the wall answer could also be Trae Young, because you have the changes of the rule, right? So he's disrespected constantly. I see it everywhere on social media. Oh yeah, Trae Young is going to average 13 points a game, blah, 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 blah.
I'm going to sit this one out.
Trae Young last night, he shredded them. 27 points, 15 assists. I mean, the guy's a stud. I mean, the rule is not going to affect him, and he's going to get some respect. So, I mean, the most improved, technically, it's not, he doesn't really fall into that category, but as far as the respect category goes, I think Trae Young could be that guy too.
I want to butt in before Chase gets his deserved soliloquy on Cam Reddish. I don't think it's being talked enough about. I don't think it's being talked enough about the improvement Trae Young can like very easily make, and that is that he is like mechanically and in his entire life been a really, really efficient 3-point shooter. He shot 34.3% from three last year. if that number goes up, and I think that's sort of a lot about the attempts he takes. If that number goes up, like, we're talking about an MVP candidate. I think that's a really important point, Garrett, because it's like he averaged 25 points last year, 29 points the year before, and he shot like basically league average from three. And he's a really good shooter. He has been his whole life, and he will be in the NBA. And so I think there's this idea that Trae Young is like a finished product right now, and I think that couldn't be further from the truth. And so I love that call, because it's like he could legitimately be an NBA MVP at some point in his life, and he's just improved every single year. And I think the shooting is like a very easy, like, tangible mark of where that could continue to go up.
Mm. Stop the presses. Let me go ahead and throw that out there real quick. We're going to need to stop the presses real quick because my pick is in. Hold on one second.
Sharif Cooper. Oh my gosh.
No, hold on. Actually, he's risen up the charts. He might play a little bit this year. I'm okay with that a little bit. I've warmed up to Sharif Cooper. All right. That's a drum roll right now with my two G2 Pilot pins, which are fantastic. Great, great pins. They're the only pins you need.
Hashtag ad.
Dude, if they were a presenting sponsor, I would give Pilot G2 just an unreal minute and 30 ad. Just an unreal, because I've sworn by them for over a decade. But anyway, I digress. No, my answer is Cam Reddish. My answer is Cam Reddish. This preseason, he's looking healthy. He's looking confident. I also think the opportunity for him is he has to play with good players. And what I mean by that is he needs to be in the starting lineup. He needs to be around other competent NBA players, veterans, and that's what it looks like he will be doing. So I don't think two things can be true. We joked that all three of our choices could be correct. However, I don't think I see a path where DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish both are in lockstep for most improved player. I think at some point something has to give with one or two of them. Like, I don't think there is room for both of these guys long term on the Hawks. So there's a reason that Reddish was popping up in trade rumors this offseason. But if he forces their hand and Hunter's knee never looks completely right, then, you know, the injuries make the decision easier on Schlenk. But I think it's one or the other. I would not be surprised either way because of what we saw early on last year from Hunter, but that was a surprise. Like, I think Reddish will have that same early season opportunity, and he can't be any worse shooting wise, right? Like, we know the defense is there. We know the defense is there. He was shooting what? Yeah, 26% from three last year. He's never shot 35%. His defensive rating per 100 possessions last year was 113. His rookie season was 115. So he hasn't even been like a good defender, a team defender, I guess, to this point in the NBA, because the numbers just don't bear that out. But he was also on bad teams around bad players and all that kind of stuff. All that being said, this is going to be the best collection of assets around him that he's had at this point in his NBA career. He is 21 years old. Or 22. He just turned 22. And this kid, if his shooting is real, if he can knock down corner threes, if he can get to the line a little bit more, if he can show that he can defend the best player on the opposing defenses, like, if we get to see Reddish on Luka next Thursday, we're going to see a lot. Like, that's something that we might see, is him just being the primary defender on Luka Doncic next Thursday. That's very much in play. We're going to see, but I think Cam has the biggest opportunity. He has the highest ceiling of anyone not named Trae Young on this team. Maybe higher than Trae Young. We'll see. But yeah, Cam, he's my pick. We'll see. I'm all in on Cam.
Can I do an alternate prediction?
No.
I think one of two outcomes happens in the first half of this year.
Okay.
Either DeAndre Hunter gets hurt and Cam Reddish is counted upon in like a real way,
mm-hmm.
or DeAndre Hunter stays healthy, looks great, and Cam Reddish is not on the team by the trade deadline.
Oh, I agree. I think one of those two will be true. Yes.
I'm rooting, by the way. I everything we saw from Cam Reddish against the Bucks last year on that very limited, like,
Hunter can't do that.
You're right. You're right. It was so tantalizing that it was like, man, I want that to be real so badly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I got to see it. I got to see it for like 2-3 weeks, a month, before I can think it's gonna happen.
And he's out of time. Like, that's the sad part. The team's too good. Like, he's out of time. This is it.
But But you were saying he needs to play with good players, and I think that goes with what we were saying. Like, if he's, let's say he's playing 20 minutes a game at the beginning of the year, mostly with that second unit, he's playing with a real-ass NBA point guard in DeLon Wright. He's playing with Kevin Huerter, who I rewatched the highlights from Game 7, where Kevin Huerter, you know, the Kevin Huerter game, that's all that needs to be said. He's playing with Danilo Gallinari, who's played in the league a million years and is a great shooter. And, you know, Gorgui Dieng or Onyeka Okongwu, who are good.
Well, I was going to say, Gorgui's probably going to start.
Right, or Capella, whatever. The point being, like, he's going to play with good NBA players even if he's not a starter right away. But I don't know if he can flourish if he's not really being counted upon.
Yeah. I'm so fascinated. I just want to know, right? Like, we kind of want to skip. It's like when you're reading a good book and you're just like, I want to know how this ends. I just want to get through it. I want to get through chapter 13, 14, and 15. Let's see where this goes. That's kind of where I am.
Enjoy the ride.
I struggle with it, though.
I
struggle with it. Final question on the Atlanta Hawks. Who stays and who goes? So, Garrett, tell me who you think is still on this roster. When we look at the opening day Hawks roster, who from this group do you think stays throughout the whole season? And who do you think ultimately is not on this team by the end of the season?
See, that's tough. It is tough because it can go a lot of different directions. I think one person who very realistically is not going to be on this roster is Danilo Gallinari, probably.
Ooh.
Whoa.
That's my anticipation. Just because, I mean, look, he's got probably the most tradable contract on the roster, wouldn't you say? The most sense.
Okay.
Well, I mean, like, if you want to trade, so you would trade a draft pick or something, and then you match with his contract.
I would, like, say Bogey's more tradable, but.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, that's another option. I mean, like, I don't see that happening unless Onyeka Okongwu comes back a little bit sooner than we expect, just because we need the front court help a little more than we do in the backcourt. I mean, Bogey, I think, is in that same category, but I kind of like Bogey staying on this team.
No, I like Bogey. What I'm saying is that he has more trade value. I think he's shown that he would actually flip a lot more. Like, he's someone who could start on a contender.
A player. Yeah, value of a player. Yeah, Bogey is certainly a better player. But Danilo Gallinari, I think it just to make the money work, I think, and just because he's like a solid player. So if you're going to trade for a veteran talent, so like say like you want to go get, I don't know, just some other superstar, Bradley Beal, I don't know, just naming some random person, you got to make the money work. And Danilo Gallinari is likely going to be that guy who makes the money work. And he's like, hey, he's a solid starter, potential six man coming off the bench. And he would go with like a DeAndre Hunter or a Cam Reddish or Kevin Hurt, one of those other guys, one of those younger guys with less money on their deal. So Danilo Gallinari is my pick if I had to pick somebody who's not going to be on this roster post trade deadline.
Okay, I like that. I like that. What about you, Max?
Yeah, I think I'll separate this question into two scenarios, and that is like whether this is they're getting a superstar back or not. I think I'll stick with. Like, if they are getting a superstar, I think the answer is well, I guess not this year. I was going to say John Collins. I think John Collins is eventually the piece in the deal for the superstar that matches the contract. Because, I mean, Gallinari or Bogdanovich isn't that guy. And then you package Collins with Hunter probably and, you know, whoever else for whomever.
That gets you to 30.
Like, that could be Towns this year. Towns or Beal. But I don't know. I don't know, like, what the deal is with trading Collins' contract and it hit a year after signing the extension. I don't know if there's any restrictions on that.
Well, I don't think you can trade Collins until December 9th, right? Like, you can't do...
Right.
I
so
think that's what it
that
is,
that complicates the, like, this year part of this question. But if, let's say they don't... The superstar deal doesn't happen until next offseason or doesn't happen at all. I think Gallinari is a really good answer. And I think I was surprised to hear it, but your reasoning made a lot of sense, which is he was really bad for a lot of last year. And we were giving him a lot of shit on this podcast because he wasn't good. And he won us over in the playoffs. But I also think it's a logical, like, we need to improve this spot. Let's package him with a pick and go get someone we really like. Cam Reddish is my other answer, just aforementioned reasoning. And we know they've been shopping him.
Or we know teams have been calling. We don't know. Like, that's the one where it's like, we don't know if it was they are shopping or people are calling.
I think you can infer based on sort of like how the narrative went that they were like looking for a lottery pick, who was floating that, and then they didn't get a lottery pick. So I don't know. I think because of all we said about Cam Reddish before, he and Gallinari would be the two most logical, not on this roster. And then I think Gorgui Jang's another one, just like a matter of if Capella and Okongwu are healthy, like he's not a necessary part of this rotation at all. Mm-hmm. And he signed a 1-year deal, so it's not like an issue or anything like that. But I would hope Okongwu eats those minutes when he's healthy.
I don't dislike those choices. I'm surprised neither of you guys said the guy that I was going to say here. It's not Hunter.
Which is?
It's not Bogey. It's not Herter. It's Lou Williams. Lou Williams, I would lock in.
Oh, yeah.
I would lock in Lou Williams not on this roster by the end of this season. Especially with Sharif Cooper and Dylan Wright. Like, I think Dylan Wright's actually going to be solid, and I think he makes Lou expendable. I don't think we're going to see playoff Lou. I think Solomon Hill might be someone who doesn't make it through the full year. But of the main cast, of the main group, I don't think Collins gets moved this year. I think fans love him, and we know Garrett. It would pain Garrett because he loves Collins dunks. He loves John Collins baptizing unsuspected defenders. My underrated option here is Bogey, because I do think, is there a scenario, guys, where like Herter even finds another level where it's like we have to put him in the starting lineup and that it can be okay with him and Trey, and you can do Reddish or Hunter, and then you still have Collins, Okongwu, Capella, Gallinari, and that core. I am curious if Bogey becomes expendable based on that. I don't know, because we still have Jalen Johnson, who's the wild card, and where he'll factor in this rotation going forward, because obviously they have big plans for Jalen Johnson. Like, they see him as a core piece. So if he's a core piece, I mean, that is part of the reason you have to think about Collins and Reddish and Hunter anyway. But I do wonder if Bogey is long for this group too. Like, what if they move him because Herter's been so good that Herter is someone that they just would rather give more of the minutes to, and he's in that Bogey spot to start the playoffs. I don't know. Like, I think Bogey is someone to keep an eye on.
I'd be stunned, honestly. It's possible, I guess, but I think we're sleeping on how good he was last year because of the stuff in the playoffs, and he was hurt, and he was limited. He was really damn good last year, especially down the stretch. And he shot 44% from three. Like, I think all of us would have said in middle of last year, mid to end of last year, probably, that he was the second best player on the team.
But I'm just saying, like, you have to shed salary at some point, and you're thinking about it, and like, if you're going to pay Herter, like, part of paying Herter is like you don't need Bogey at 18 mil. Right?
I guess, but 18 mil is a really nice sweet spot, honestly.
Well, you can't have him 18 mil and Herter 18 mil. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's right, just too much.
You know, but it's also like, what contracts are you shedding before Bogey? You're probably shedding Gallinari before Bogey. You might even try to shed Capella before
Bogey. Well, you're shedding Gallinari if you can play Jalen Johnson at the four as a rookie, right? Like, that's the thing. Is if, can he do it? Or Hunter.
We don't talk
right.
about Hunter at the four enough, which I'm excited about. But yeah, I just think, like, I think he's a really damn good basketball player. This is only his fifth year in the NBA. We kind of sleep on that. And he was so valuable down the stretch last year. And he's the kind of guy, too, who we saw last year can carry the scoring load by himself if Trey doesn't have it or is out. And I don't know, for all the depth we talk about, I don't know how many other guys on the team can really carry that. I don't know.
Well, we saw what happened. I mean, the Hawks had, they made their turnaround end of February, and that aligned with Bogey coming back. Like that, and then you saw how much better the Hawks got when Bogey's presence was added to the rotation. I think they won the first six, seven games of Nate McMillan's coaching career, but those were also like the first six, seven games of Bogey Bogdanovic playing meaningful minutes for the Hawks. So, I mean, that's not a coincidence. The Hawks are a better basketball team with him in the roster, in the rotation, playing meaningful minutes. And so I would be very, very surprised if they do trade him this year. I would be floored if they trade him.
Okay. I don't know. It's exciting nonetheless. We have options. And I mean, this is the best talks team in our lifetime, I think. And that's exciting. And also, the city jerseys are incredible. We all universally agree, right? The yellow City University, whatever they're calling it, jerseys.
Absolutely.
Second to the MLK jerseys. They'll never be able to.
No, they're better than the MLK jerseys, I would say.
The
magic of the MLK jerseys is unmatched.
That's two different conversations. Are they lucky? Maybe. Are they better looking? Then I like the court more than the jerseys. Like the MLK court in Atlanta is just top notch.
No, but here, no, real quick. I want to touch on one other thing before you said talk about the jerseys though. Mm-hmm. You said this is the best our lifetime. No, this is the best Hawks team probably ever. Atlanta Hawks have said, look, I mean, this team won a championship in 1957 or something like that. The St. Louis Hawks did. Mm-hmm. They took on Bill Russell, but it's like, but look. In our lifetime, we have never, or ever, since they've been in Atlanta, they have not had a team go to the NBA Finals. Never once. And this is a team that could very realistically be one of those teams. That is like one of the favorites to make it to the NBA Finals. And that is just so far and away better than anything that we have ever experienced as a Hawks fan base. So this is the best team going into a season. This is the best Hawks team I have ever seen. I think that we've ever seen as a franchise.
I want to run through a brick wall now.
Max is so ready for this season.
I'm so excited for this Hawks team.
I'm so ready. And if last night was any indication of what we can expect from this team, then look, 27 points, 15 assists from Trae Young. They're playing a kind of a decrepit Miami Heat team. That was like the shell of its team with Udonis Haslam in its starting lineup. But still, the team looks efficient. The team looks primed and ready to play. They look sharp. The rotations are fantastic. They play lights out defense. They go after boards. They play hard, play physical. They do all of the little things right. And if they shoot the ball lights out, there's not much that can stop this team.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, you couldn't tell.
I'm really bummed that Atlanta decided to put together the best Atlanta Hawks team ever after I leave. Like, I don't know if the two are related, if I'm not allowed back as a permanent resident in Atlanta ever again, but I don't know. And I move, and then they hit that next gear. So who is to say? Max Markovich, we can find you on twitter.com at @Max_Markovich. We can follow Garrett and the good folks over there at 92.9 The Game at GChapATL. Garrett, are you going to a high school game tonight?
Nope, I'm back in studio.
Oh, that's right. You're back, what, for several months? Or several weeks, rather?
Until the playoff push in November. So I'm here until November 6th or something like that, whatever that last first Friday.
Okay.
Friday in November, then I'm right back out in the field.
There you go. Max, what about you? Do you have any big weekend plans for Michigan? The bye week?
Bye week. For the big bye week? No, I don't know how to spend my weekend, honestly, because of that.
Are you going to hit the links?
Oh, man, I might, dude. I really want to. I don't know. My golf game's been in and out, and it's getting toward winter. But might have a few more weeks in us. Good run.
Okay. There you go. Guys, thank you so much for the time. As always, I greatly appreciate it. We will be back next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.